Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 2. In one of the books I am reading, I came across the story of a female executive in a very dysfunctional company. Although her company discouraged fraternizing, this woman started going down the hall and stopping in offices to visit her employees. She had no real agenda. The first person she stopped in and talked to was terrified, thinking she had come into his office to fire him. "No, no, no," she said. "I just figured that after 3 years of working together, I should get to know you." She spent time with all 13 of her employees until one day her own boss called her in. "I don't know what you're doing," he said, "but this company was almost bankrupt. It turned around, and when I asked our personnel director, what had happened, everybody said you were responsible." What would you say she did? Give a great motivational speech? No. All it seems she did was show the employees that the person in authority over them cared for them by becoming personally involved in their lives, and they responded. Do you know the one who has ultimate authority in your life wants to be personally, intimately involved in your life? Is he? Do you believe the one who spoke this world into existence and is still in authority over all wants to have a personal relationship with you? Or are you a practical deist? Deism is the idea that God does exist and that he did create the world, but after creation he walked away uncaring. If you demand an explanation for everything and how everything happens, you may be a deist. Or are you sure the one who created you wants to be personally involved in your life? We're going to look at this snapshot of a lady's life that knew God is personal. She knew God was personally involved in her life. Hannah is the lady's name. She knew that God is a personal God. 1 Samuel 2, we're going to read verses 1 through 10. Then Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, but she who has many children languishes. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he set the world on them. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord will be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king and will exalt the horn of his anointed." A personal God. A personal God is one in whom you can delight. Hannah delighted in God. Do you? Hannah delighted in the Lord. Hannah was one of two wives of Elkanah, a man by the name of Elkanah. The other wife had had children, but Hannah had not. And that humiliated her. It was a problem in her life. Elkanah was such a good man and one devoted to the Lord, and every year he would take his family up to worship, to sacrifice. Well, a couple years before this prayer of praise that we just read, Hannah had gone with them as she normally did. And she was there worshiping. And she was praying. Now, her heart was not just a little bothered. Her heart was so troubled that she stood there and she was praying and her mouth was moving. But no sound was coming out. Well, Eli was the priest, and he looked at her and said, "Are you drunk? There's something wrong with you." And she said, "No, my heart is so heavy. Everything is so, I'm so disturbed." Well, it wasn't long after that, the Bible says, that the Lord visited her, remembered her. And Samuel was on his way, her son Samuel. And in her prayer, she dedicated Samuel to the Lord. In what we read this morning, or what we read earlier, could read it in chapter 1, she was making good on her promise that Samuel would be dedicated to the Lord. They had what they called Nazarite vows, Nazarene. You remember Samson, he was a Nazarite. But here Samuel was as well, and he was dedicated to the Lord. So when he was about 3, it says, after he was weaned, when Samuel was about 3, they went up to worship again. And Samuel stayed with Eli to serve the Lord. So as she's praying here, Hannah affirmed her faith in the Lord as the great judge and overseer of all human life. And she also knew that he rewards those who seek after him. So 4 times in these first 2 verses, she expressed her delight in the Lord. First, she said, "My heart exults, my heart rejoices in the Lord." She found joy in him, not just in what he could do. And that's the difference, and that's what was the passage there in 2 Chronicles 7:14 that I prayed. That we seek sometimes God's hand when we don't seek his face. We want him to do something when what we need to be doing is seeking him because of who he is. And she said, my heart delights. I exult in the Lord. Second thing she said was, "My horn, my strength is exalted in the Lord." Remember, she is giving up her first son, her firstborn child. Yet she says her life is better because of the Lord. All the things that he would do as a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old and all those things she wasn't going to see, but the Lord was good. Third thing she expressed was her delight in the Lord by saying how she could now speak boldly to those who put her down. Elkanah's other wife, chapter 1 says, would provoke her, would pick on her, would tease her, all these things. Lastly, she said she rejoiced in the Lord's salvation. His salvation. The object of Hannah's delight was neither her nor her son. It was the Lord. He was the source of both her son and her happy circumstance. And she knew it. And she went on to speak of the Lord's holiness, his uniqueness. And she calls him her rock, her foundation. You think about the story Jesus told about the person who built their house on a rock and the person who built their house on the sand. And the sand gave way, but the rock was sure, solid. And any house, any life that's built on him is sure, solid. But the one that's built on the sand, what the world says, falls down. She thoroughly delighted in the Lord because she knew God as a personal God in whom you can delight. What'd you eat for supper last night? Did you enjoy it? If you'd eaten peanut butter and crackers, the stomach wouldn't growl. You say, "Well, I like peanut butter and crackers." Well, eat it for 365 days and tell me how much you like it then. Or imagine eating peanut butter and crackers for the rest of your life. Whew. 1 year when we had the young lady that I termed foster daughter, living with us there in Cassett, she came home one day and said, what's for supper? I said, squash. And went, ah. I said, well, you got to eat what you have. What'd you eat? Imagine eating that. You'd get so tired of it, you'd even come to dread mealtime. But imagine having steak today, your favorite seafood tomorrow, your favorite Italian meal the next. Instead of dreading mealtime, would you not delight when you were called to eat? And that's part of that's what I'm trying to express here, that Hannah delighted in the Lord. And that may be a weak analogy, but it does point to the difference of living a futile, aimless existence versus knowing and loving and living for Jesus. It points to the difference of some world existence, of some world religions who teach of always striving to appease an angry God with the Lord who welcomes us and wants to be personally involved in our life. Yes, the Lord may be angered by sin, but it's because He's angry because we're hurting ourselves. But Jesus, through His sacrificial, substitutionary death, paid the price that you owe. He paid the price that you owe, and which makes it possible to come into this loving relationship that we talk about when we talk about being a Christian or a follower of Christ. It's about being in this loving relationship with Jesus. Can you say this morning with Hannah, my heart rejoices in the Lord? If there's any dread or staleness in your life, how is your relationship with Christ? He is a personal God. You can delight in a personal God because you know He rules the world. Hannah delighted in God because she saw Him control every aspect of life. Do you? The arrogant, puffed up people talk about themselves, but the Lord knows and weighs the actions. Pay attention to the reversals that Hannah mentioned. The military success of a nation is under the Lord's rule. The bows of the mighty are shattered while the feeble get stronger. Remember, Samuel is the last judge. All those people knew for all the years of the judges was the Philistines would come and God would raise up a deliverer. The people would turn away from him and the Philistines would come until they finally began to understand what 2 Chronicles 7:14 is really talking about. And God would raise up a deliverer, a judge. And back and forth and on and on and on they went. And so you can kind of understand how she can say that the military success of a nation is under the Lord's rule. She talked about those who thought they were rich and self-sufficient. Ended up hiring themselves out just to survive, while those who were hungry, poor, ceased to hunger. She talked about the childless woman who would have despaired of growing old, gives birth to 7, the number of completeness. While the mother of many, who would have thought everything was good, becomes weak. The Lord rules over the world. I was talking to somebody about this passage, and they said, think back to 1967 and Israel's Six-Day War. So I did a little research. Do you realize how many instances in those 6 days prove that the Lord rules over the world? One of them was the Israeli conquest of the Arab city of Shechem. Thinking Israel's army would come from one direction, that's where the armies got ready. But Israel's troops came from the other side and literally walked into town unopposed. The residents thought that they were the Iraqi forces who were due to arrive to back them up. Another instance was in the late hours of one of the night. They had loaded a truck with ammunition that the city of Jerusalem would need, And they had parked it downtown somewhere where there were just buildings everywhere. And the danger of that was is if something happened, if a shell hit it, it would explode and kill a lot of people and make and destroy a lot of buildings. Well, sure enough, a missile comes whistling in and hits the truck, but it doesn't explode. And God saved them yet again. The Lord rules the world. Do you trust Him? Do you trust Him to do what's right, even if it's not what you want? You say, well, there are some things in my world that I'm willing to let God do what He thinks is right, but there are some things in my world that He needs to do exactly what I want Him to do. If that's your stance, then you don't really think that He's in control and knows what's best. You say, well, you don't understand what's going on in my world. Then you talk to me about a 2-month-old grandson that we're trusting that the Lord's going to heal. I got to go home Thursday. I think it was Thursday. One day this week. And I put him to sleep on my chest. Of course, I might have fallen asleep for a moment too, but you know. But do I trust him? Do I trust him? Do I trust him with everything in my life? Can I say to you this morning, I do. I trust him with everything in my life. Does listening to the news scare you when you hear about shootings? Lord's got that. Does a health issue you or your family are facing scare you? He's got that. Does financial turbulence in the world bother you? He's got that. Whatever you're facing, whatever happens in this world, the Lord rules it all. And He's personally involved and He personally cares. Because He is a personal God. You can delight in a personal God because you know He is relational. Another reason Hannah delighted in God is because she knew He knew her. Verses 6 through 10 contain a list of contrasting actions the Lord does. The Lord rules, deciding when life is over. He makes poor and He makes rich. He brings down and He raises up. Out of the worst of conditions, the Lord can make a person into the best of conditions. All of life, all of the earth is His, and He is in control, setting the world as He wants it. And in verse 9 is a promise. He keeps the feet, the life of the godly ones, but the wicked are silenced. They are alone in the darkness. Those who raise themselves up against the Lord will find themselves shattered, because He is the judge of all the earth, and He will raise up His own. Think for a moment of your favorite actor or athlete or singer. You enjoy watching that person act or play or sing, but could you say you really delight in them? Probably not, because you have no real personal relationship with them. I am looking forward, as I always do about this time of year, to football, college football coming on. And I've been to a few college football games in my life. Why I remember it, I don't know, but whenever it was, I saw Uwe Von Schaman, who was the place kicker for the University of Oklahoma, kick a 60-yard field goal. And they beat the dog out of somebody because it was one of those early games in the seasons, but I don't delight in that guy. Several years ago, I got to go to several Clemson ball games. And the little the little nephew was playing, and I delighted in him because I knew him. Do you delight in the Lord because you know him? Because you know him personally? You can know the Lord personally and have a real relationship with him. Think for a moment about the Lord holding your life, your family's lives in his hand. Do you know he personally cares? And he personally controls? Think about your finances. We're to be a good steward, yes. We're to be obedient, absolutely. But don't worry about what might happen and trust him. Are you holding on to the promise of verse 9 that he will keep the feet of the godly ones? You see, that's one thing that you can control, because if you will seek after him, you'll find him. If we really would humble ourselves and pray and seek his face, he would heal the land. So our focus should be on our relationship with him. Is your life focused on him? And then we can just let him take care of everything else, because he can handle it. Do you know the one who has ultimate authority in your life? Do you know the one who has ultimate authority in your life wants to be personally, intimately involved in your life? Is he? Is he? Do you believe the one who spoke this world into existence and is still in authority over all wants to have a personal relationship with you? He does. Do you delight in him? Do you know he is personally involved in your life? Do you realize he is relational? Have you asked him to be personally involved in your life? He is a personal God.